Hello, this is the On the Keys podcast, and I'm your host, David Kaiser. Thanks for tuning in, or rather, selecting this podcast. Please share it with your friends. On this episode, you'll hear about how melody works, and this is a three-part series of the elements of music seen through the eyes, or rather, the keys and the ears of the piano. So I hope you enjoy this episode, and please subscribe to the podcast. Happy listening. Movement 1. I'm calling movement 1 around the piano. In many theory classes, the piano takes an important place in the classroom, and it used to be that the piano was an important place to gather around in the home. Let's see what this movement will bring, and maybe this part of the show will perhaps inspire us as a community or a family gather around in earnest this great instrument again. Many times we gather to sing around the piano, because the piano can ideally mimic an entire orchestra, or God forbid, a popular band. Just go to YouTube. In our case, sing is the key word, because on this edition of Around the Piano, one of the elements of music that only the very best of piano players know how to do, and that is to play melodies. Of all the elements of music, melody may be the most mysterious. Why does one melody work and another doesn't? On my piano is a copy of Bach's Well-Tempered Clavier, the fugues being the most important at this time. So with a wealth of melodic material at my fingertips, let's get started. Actually, I probably should get the Bach and put it in front of me. One moment. A definition first. A melody is a string of notes that the ear hears as a unique event, a series of musical notes. It might be silly to say, but one sings melodies, one can't sing harmony, but one can sing a melody against another melody and call it a harmony. And one can suggest horizontal harmony with melody. Even some melodies of Bach suggest being played or sung by two instruments. I wonder if I could find one of those. Okay, I had to dig up my copy of the partitas. Here's the right hand of the partita number 3 in A minor. I don't know about you, but I really hear two melodies in this part of this. Let's have a quote by Johann Philipp Kernberger. The true goal of music, its proper enterprise, is melody. All the parts of harmony have as their ultimate purpose only beautiful melody. Therefore, the question of which is the more significant, melody or harmony, is futile. Beyond doubt, the means is subordinate to the end. Now, melody doesn't exist in a vacuum. You need all the elements to make a good melody stand out. So this show will only feature melodies written for the piano, and I may play the accompanying parts if it makes more sense. So melodies are built around harmonic framework, but ignoring that, you can skip, and you can step. Skip, step, stepping down. You can skip and step in different keys using different scales, but the fact remains you can skip and you can step, and that's how you make a melody. And you can divide up your skips and steps and repeats into phrases. Then you can string those phrases together. So here's Twinkle Twinkle Little Star a little faster. That's one phrase, here's another one. Another one. And the first phrase repeats. You can also add words to your melody to make it a song, or you can put music to your words, but that is outside the scope of this show. Here's Mozart's Piano Sonata in B-flat major, K333. I think this is a particularly beautiful melody. One of the nice things about Mozart and the classical composers is that the melody is broken up into these wonderful little phrases, as you can hear in the beginning. Then you have another statement, another answer. And then we're going to explore a little bit, add some figuration, and finish it all off with a scale. Beautifully proportioned. So we started with Mozart, but let's go through the rough periods of classical music, Baroque, classical, romantic, and contemporary. It's rough, but it will work for our purposes. Bach wrote some of the most recognizable melodies of our time. You have the Jesu, Joy of Man's Desiring, the famous opening measures. Even if it isn't the melody proper, it's still beautiful. The proper melody is the Cantus Firmus, and it's from a cantata, and it's as simple as they come. So here's the opening. Played at weddings everywhere, but that's really not the prime concern of this piece, because this is what Bach called a choral prelude, or kind of an improvisation on a theme. Now that Cantus Firmus, or that melody, the theme, is very simple. That's it. How many notes are in there? One, two, three repeated notes. Well, he's just using three notes. Going up the scale and then going back down. Well, there's the fourth note. But let's get back to the keyboard. The well-tempered clavier, the Bible of the piano and the keyboard, contains a wealth of melodic material that composers have referred to ever since. And most of this material occurs in the fugues, as I mentioned before. And the subject are the main themes of those fugues. The preludes, by the way, are mostly figuration-based. What makes the fugues interesting is that these melodies are melodies that can be used in the art of counterpoint and fugue writing. They are designed to be easily manipulated and are quite practical. But somehow, by sheer genius, Bach gives them plenty of character. Now, here are just a few examples. Here's a particularly somber fugue. That one is notable because there's a huge leap in it that just describes angst in a musical form. Now, here's what I mean by practical for fugue writing or counterpoint. It's a utilitarian subject because it is short and it's based on these leaps that hover around the fourth or the fifth, which is an important interval if you're writing fugues. Now here's the next entrance. Etc. Now that noticeable opening becomes a feature of this fugue, so it's always easy to tell when the next subject enters, especially as the music gets thicker in texture. Here's a more toccata-like fugue subject from the A minor fugue. One of my favorites is the G minor, which is also a very short theme. And then the right hand, same melody comes in. Fugues are nice because it's basically a whole bunch of melodies at the same time. Now, generally speaking, in the classical time period during the 18th century, melodies ruled the day without any of that complicated polyphonic stuff you just heard, mucking everything up. I might add that the keyboard melodies of that time had their own distractions, that of the budding symphony orchestra. So many times the forte piano imitates large instrumental groups of an orchestra playing together and then smaller or solo instruments playing, sometimes called ritornello and ripieno. Haydn is fond of this, and so is Mozart. Haydn also composed some of the most beautiful aria-like melodies, full of ornaments and cascading scales. His melodies are both melismatic and vocal, and sometimes can sound like voices not singing, but speaking. Should I see a doctor? For my favorite sonata by Haydn, the two movement D major, opus 42, here's the beginning. Both hands, just a little bit. What a lovely little melody. You can imagine a vocal quality to this. And the melody is made with all these extra little flourishes that are not exactly melodic in themselves. They're more figuration. Now, it gets more complicated. He's breaking the melody up in the second part. So, it might be more appropriate to play both hands. Because we have a few melodies speaking at the same time, but not like Bach would do in a fugue. These are separated by silence. Now our main theme comes back again, da-yum, bum-bum, but this time Haydn ornaments it even more. He decorates the melody. It's in the scale. So that's Haydn for you, always wanted to have fun with the melodies. In a chronological order of classical composers, we have Haydn, born in 1732, then Mozart in 56, and then Beethoven in 70, and Schubert in 97, all relatively close to each other. We heard from Mozart already, and Beethoven is just all over the place. And by the way, the classical composers all wrote the occasional fugue, sometimes pretty melodies and crafty/creative figuration or figurative passages up and down the keyboard just didn't cut it when the need for a work of great architectural beauty was required. And we use the word architectural when we talk about fugues. So then, on to the Romantic age of melodic writing. Perhaps the most famous melodist was Frédéric Chopin, who took all the best practices of the classical style of tightly knit phrases and worked his Polish-Parisian charm on them, creating an often gossamer sound of filigree passages of ravishing beauty that just erupt from mournful melodies. That was purple prose, but there is no other way of describing Chopin's music. So then, here is his C-sharp minor nocturne, the most famous one. I'm going to play just the melody. Thank you. Quite a beautiful, ravishing melody, that one. Now, remember the melody from Jesu, Joy, Man's Desiring? The simple four-note theme? Well, Chopin was also known to know how to write a terse melody. One of the preludes features a two-note melody that's one of his famous pieces. Yep, that's it. That's basically the prelude in E minor by Chopin. Now, there are many more examples of romantic melodies, but let's jump ahead to the 20th and the 21st century. Impressionistic composers like Ravel and Debussy had a unique approach tied in with a new feel for harmony and a tonal palette of many colors that we have not heard from before. Here's the opening melody and just the melody of a prelude called, fittingly for our season, Dead Leaves. Spooky harmony that does not delineate any clear key. Just for fun, I'm going to show you how harmony plays into a melody. So here's the opening chord with that F sharp on top. What a strange, strange harmony. Now, did you know that Aaron Copland also wrote some pretty severe tunes? Witness this one from his piano variations. I remember quite a visceral reaction from the audience at Spivey Hall when Stephen Huff launched into the opening. I gotta grab this score. That's it, a rather dissonant four-note motif that's used throughout the piece. Of course, it's the variations on that. It reminds me of the Bach motif. Anyway, that's by Aaron Copland when he was busy trying to show himself as a serious composer. Here's another recent melody. This is from the Etude Fantasy by John Curigliano. And here's the melody from the Etude number 2. Which doesn't make a whole lot of sense outside of context of the harmony, which I will play for you. Etc. Haunting when we put everything together. Now, how about Samuel Barber? He's known for writing the Adagio for strings, so he must have some beautiful melodies for piano. I have his piano sonata in front of me. Ah, yes. This melody reminds me of Bach, but it's actually almost 12 tone. This is from the slow movement of his sonata, just the right hand. So together with the left hand. Let's listen to the opening theme of the Blanca Variations, a piece composed just last year for the Clara Haskell piano competition by Thomas Addis. Though it's hard to tell, Addis uses many different note values, and in the course of three phrases, or phrases delineated by slurs, those curves over the notes, he changes the time signature up to three times, and not at the beginning of each phrase, sometimes in the very middle. So here are the first three phrases of the Blanca Variations. Thank you. a beautiful melody. Now let's hear it with some harmony. I hate to do this. A very beautiful opening theme of that piece. So that's a new melody that is reminiscent of an old dance suite or a Baroque style. And I think for contrast, it might be nice to share with you one of the first melodies actually specified for the piano. Giustini was born the same year as Bach, but much of Bach's keyboard music was written with the harpsichord in mind, and the main reason is because Giustini was born in Italy, and that's the birthplace of the pianoforte. In a published collection of sonatas, Giustini specified the piano a forte, an early instrument made by Cristofori. So now, from the newest melody to one of the oldest for the instrument. A beautiful melody. For me, a meaningful, moving melody is one of the most important parts of a classical piece of music. I hope you have enjoyed this historical tale heard through melody.
Beat tonic, adagio, allegro,
trill, mordent.
Mordent trill,
polyrhythms, hydraulics,
polyrhythms, and nostra.